Honorable members, good morning. And good morning to FIC family. I can see the whole office is here today. I hope the systems are working in the offices while all of you are here. Welcome. Today we are receiving your annual report as per the rules of this institution. So we will listen to you and see if what you are reporting on is what you told us last year when you came and presented your strategic plan. So we're going to look for that exactly, and that you are using the public resources efficiently and for the purposes that we're meant for. So this is our work from this side. Today we'll be doing a lot of listening as members. Hence I will hand over to you, Mr. Murray, to introduce your delegation. There's one face that I don't know from the delegation, and maybe members, they have not met some of the faces that are here today, so I think it will be important for you to introduce your delegation first and then get to your presentation. Over to you.
Chair, thank you very, very much. And again, Chair, it's an honor to be able to present our annual report to you and members of your committee again this year. And to say that this is the third time in about 6 months that we have met and got together, the strategic plan earlier this year and then the visit to the FIC a couple of months ago. So we're indeed very honored, and we'll take you through the information at hand. Chair, if I could introduce members of our management committee to you and to members of your committee. On my immediate left, Mr. Max Maboka, who is head of our corporate services but also acting CFO at the moment. To his left, Ms. Mabaso, who's in charge of the finances, and then preceding Mr. Christopher Malan, who you all know, who's head of the compliance division in the FIC, and Mr. Mewalal, who's in charge of the intelligence and analysis components. And then in the back row, starting on the far side, Ms. Grace Madilonga, who's in charge of our HR, and you'll know her from many years. Ndonga, who deals with our compliance and legal issues. Shungwe, who deals with IT. Ms. Kassin, who's in charge of our communication. I don't need to introduce the next person, and nor the person sitting immediately behind me. Chair, we have spent time with you on those couple of occasions earlier this year. We've gone through the strat plan. We've spent some time with you talking about how we work and what we do, etc., and hopefully that has informed your ability to interact, engage, and interrogate the annual report and our performance. You have the report itself, and we've distributed the slides that we're going to talk through to you as well. So you have those ahead of you or in front of you. The presentation, I know the chair of the committee always accuses me of talking too much. So we've tried to make it as brief as possible, and we've done so in a way which assumes that members of the committee have spent time with us and therefore are familiar with the operations and so on of the FIC. So I'm going to run through quite quickly a brief set of slides. They're quite high level, they're quite abstract, but they attempt to pull the information that is sitting in this document in front of you. So if I may start, Chair, there are four key areas we're going to cover. Once again, just quickly running over the FIC mandate for a reminder, then the highlights for the financial year under review, and then some of the key financial data, which pulls from the report, and then some of our plans for the future. And some of those plans, you were already introduced to those when you spent some time with us, but it's a reiteration of those. So, Chair, to run through the functions of the FIC, which derive directly from our statutory mandate, the Financial Intelligence Centre receives information from a range of different sources, primarily business, which are called accountable institutions. This information is received, is then processed, and ultimately made available. We then refer that information to various bodies in the law enforcement community. So, for example, SAPS, in particular the Hawks, the DPCI, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, the Receiver of Revenue, which is a major customer of the FIC, and the Intelligence Services. In terms of government's priority outcome areas, these all fall under Priority Outcome 3, which focuses on making South Africa a safer place for all to live in. We then also exchange that information on occasion with similar and equivalent bodies in other jurisdictions and sometimes through Interpol as well. Okay. And as I've said on many occasions, there's a very strict protocol for the way in which this is done and how it is done and what that information may be used for. We, as the FIC, then coordinate the anti-money laundering and terror, anti-terror financing policy in the country, and we have a responsibility for administering the Act, the FIC Act. We report, as you know, directly to the Minister of Finance. We also liaise very closely with National Treasury. We liaise closely with all these other government departments that I've mentioned, as well as in addition to the law enforcement, we work with Home Affairs, we work with DIRCO, and then all the supervisory bodies, there are a number of them, which form part of the next bullet, to which we then give guidance and we monitor their work as well. So that we're talking there about the Reserve Bank, in particular the Banking Supervision Department, and the Financial Surveillance Department, the FSB, the National Gambling Board, and so on. We give guidance and work with various businesses that are responsible for administering or implementing the Act. And all of this forms part of government priority number four, which is essentially around the economy and ensuring financial integrity and ensuring that the economy, the institutions, financial institutions in the economy, are safe for investment. Chair, we also work with the supervisory bodies as mentioned to enable them to inspect for compliance. And then in terms of the FIC Act, and more particularly the amended FIC Act, the FIC itself has been given the powers, Parliament gave it the powers to do inspections and to monitor for non-compliance, particularly in those sections of the business area where there are no supervisory bodies. In particular, I'm talking about the Post Bank here, Krugerrand dealers, motor car dealers, and so on. Okay. As part of that, we've implemented a registration system for the various sectors are obliged to register with the FIC. And then as part of Government Priority Outcome 11, which deals with international focus in the continent and the world, the FIC coordinates and leads the South African delegation to the Financial Action Task Force, which is the international global standard-setting organization. And it reports directly into the G20 processes and therefore the Minister of Finance in the G20 world. We also participate in its regional body in Southern Africa, Southern East Africa, and then another body, the Egmont Group, which is made up of 127 financial intelligence units, in other words, the equivalent bodies to what we are here in South Africa. We are expected, in terms of legislation, to maintain efficient and secure data systems in order to receive and to manage the information, and to operate as a sustainable organ of state. So that's our mandate, and that's the background, that's information which you already have and know from previous interactions. The next slide summarizes this, Chair, those three areas which seek to capture both government priority areas as well as where and how the FIC delivers against those priority areas. And then on the right-hand column, the spend in relation to that as well. So that's seeking to, again, at a high level, to capture that information. Then the FIC itself has six strategic outcome or objective areas, six of them. And the first one is, for the period under review, is to improve the consumption or the use or the utilization of the FIC's products and services. In other words, the information that the data we receive and process, making that available to law enforcement and intelligence services, and to improve their ability to use that and to deliver against that. And without going into all the details, so we've just isolated three areas. The first one was the FIFA World Cup, where we were an active part of the national joint operations, ensuring the success and the safety of the World Cup process. It meant having staff operating, a large number of staff operating 24/7 for the entire period of the World Cup. And in fact, for a financial intelligence unit, in other words, 127 around the world, this is the first time that this agency, this kind of agency, has been involved in that kind of operation. And what's important to say there as well is that involved liaison and cooperation from banks and other institutions, so that there was live, real-time access to information, that the moment the intelligence agencies or law enforcement agencies picked up a threat, we were able to act with cooperation of the banks, and so we were able to act against that threat and neutralize it. Subsequent to that, we've been involved in discussions with other financial intelligence centers to talk about how that becomes possible, becomes even a global standard in the future, Brazil and others. The second bullet deals with the working relationships with law enforcement. That has been a long struggle, is probably too strong a word, but from the time of the implementation of the FIC Act, getting the authorities to know how they can use or best use financial intelligence as part of their investigations. We are a part of, statutorily, we're incorporated into the Hawks, SAPS legislation that enables that. We work very closely with NICOC, the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee. We are part of the anti-corruption task team that has been set up and is running and dealing with corruption priority matters. And we are co-sponsor of the multi-agency working group set up by the Minister of Finance, looking at ways of cleaning up and making the procurement and supply chain system more efficient and so on. And then we work in the national operations intelligence structure on a continuous basis. What we also need to point to is the development of a task team approach to many of our or the use of our data and many of the investigations. And so what we've learned over the last 2 or 3 years is that by creating a task team, you're more able to and more effectively able to use the information and more effectively able to deliver on investigations. And that's been something that we've been able to make, we believe, a quite significant difference. So there are a lot of, and the report picks up a lot of references to pyramid schemes, Ponzi schemes, which we've been actively involved in tracking, numerous instances of fraud, organized crime, and now more recently, for example, environmental crime and rhino investigations and so on. And that's all done through the task team approach. And then in dealing with the multi-agency working group, party to the process of exposing in the region of around 25 billion of corrupt activities involving the tender processes. If we move on to strategic objective 2, and that's about improving compliance with the FIC Act. What's important, particularly in the year under review, the amendments that this committee passed and Parliament passed came into effect during the course of this current financial year, or past financial year. That imposes administrative sanctions on businesses that do not comply with the FIC Act. It enables the issuing of directives to remedy and to fix up the problem. And where businesses might have problems with the sanctions, there's an appeal process, including an appeal board or a court that has been or is in the process of being set up at the moment. So that's giving expression to those amendments. We also enacted new reporting requirements, in particular the cash threshold reporting system, which started in October last year, and by the end of this financial year under review, we're talking about 1.3 million reports having been made to the FIC of cash amounts exceeding 25,000 rand. That has significantly increased since then, but that's under a different the current financial year. We'll talk about that at another point. At the end of the financial year, 8,661 companies had registered, and then as part of raising compliance, been involved in 75 training sessions with accountable institutions, and the FIC had conducted 192 compliance reviews or audits of businesses, as well as the post office, and 122 of those were joint reviews with the relevant supervisory bodies. So, for example, with the National Gambling Board in the casino area, State Agency Affairs Board in the estate agency area, and so on. And all of this is laying the basis for the future rollout of increased and enhanced compliance behavior of companies as we move forward. Just to pick up on some of the numbers flowing from all of these activities. The two new reporting requirements introduced cash threshold as well as electronic cross-border transactions. So we see every transaction moving in and out of the country on a continuous basis. There's been a 25% increase in the number of suspicious transactions reported to the FIC. And there's 36,990 STRs reported as opposed to the 29,411 from the previous year. 1,311,671 cash transaction reports, and that amounts to 32.7 billion rand of cash reports sent through to us. 8661 registered entities, 192 inspections, 75 training sessions, and then dealt with 112 requests from foreign law enforcement agencies. Most of those are financial intelligence units from around the world, and that's a 35% increase up from the previous year. Chair, moving on then to strategic objective three, which is improved anti-money laundering capacity enhancement in the region. ISAMALAG, that acronym stands for the Eastern and Southern African Anti-Money Laundering Group. It's a horrible term, but it includes all the SADC countries as well as countries in Eastern Africa which do not fall part of SADC. There are 14 countries at the moment, expanding to include some additional SADC members, Angola, DRC, but also Rwanda, Ethiopia, and others. That's all under negotiation at the moment. We participate in that. We've had an official deployed into the Secretariat to assist the Secretariat run. It sits in Dar es Salaam. And then we've directly contributed technical assistance to those countries, Zambia, Mozambique, Malawi, Mauritius, and Namibia, in the course of the year, and have established relationships with them for an ongoing process. In particular, Zambia and Mozambique and Namibia, those three, we have a standing arrangement to assist them as we move forward. Chair, under strategic objective four, improving the framework in South Africa. So this is not a static framework that was introduced by Parliament when the FIC Act came through. It was always understood it's going to be an evolving process, and it's going to be a dynamic process. And so as we give effect to the legislation, as we work with other entities, so we learn. And so there's a continuous process of reviewing the legislation. And you will recall from previous interactions that review process is necessary because the international standards are evolving and changing all the time as well. So we have to find ways of incorporating those standards into our legislation on a continuous and dynamic basis. And you only have to think within the tax domain or the auditing standards, banking standards and so on, Basel, these things constantly change and constantly need to be updated. We're responsible for doing that. Bullet point two, on the improvements to the FIC Act, there we're considering expanding the range of business entities that need to report to the FIC. So, for example, we're having a discussion at the moment as to whether veterinarians shouldn't be made an accountable institution in the context of the plundering of natural resources, rhinos and other animals, whether there shouldn't be an obligation on them to report certain financial transactions and so on. It's under discussion, nothing fixed, but that's an example of the kind of engagement we have continuously. The next bullet, we've put in place the first steps to deal with understanding illicit financial flows. It's a massive task, but to make sense of the flows that leave the country, what of that are derived from the proceeds of crime, and so that we can separate that out and begin to implement a better and more targeted approach to dealing with those illicit flows. Before your time as a committee chair, with due respect, there was a mutual evaluation, which is an assessment done by the Financial Action Task Force, IMF, World Bank, of South Africa's anti-money laundering system. We were obligated to report back in February on updates and fixing up some of the remedial actions in the country since then. That's been done. We have signed a memorandum of understanding with a number of countries in order to be able to work with and to exchange information, six of them in the course of this year. Much of the time that's strategic in order to be able to exchange information on specific targets. The FIC Advocate Smith, who unfortunately is not here today, but is co-chair within the Financial Action Task Force of the working group that is looking at a review of the international standards. And he's also in charge of, within the FIC, of our legislation. And then we deployed an official full-time into the United Nations Security Council, the Counterterrorism Executive Director, the CTED. South Africa, as a member, was asked to do that, and the DIRCO asked if we could please second somebody. So we've had somebody operating within that framework for the last period as well. Number five, and we're getting through it, Chair. The information technology system within the FIC, the ICT system is critical to our ability to receive these large volumes of data, our ability to process and so on. So we place a lot of emphasis on IT. We introduced the ability to register businesses. We've introduced in the course of this year the ability to receive these two data requirements. The one is the cash threshold, as I've already said, and the other one is the electronic cross-border data that comes through. These are vast, vast volumes of data that we have to collect and be able to process. That's been put in place. And then we've also built, Mr. Shongwe and his team have built a capacity to get large volumes of report in single batches, particularly from the financial institutions, so they don't have to send report by report. They send it through as a bundle. And that's probably a world first that we've been able to put into effect. When we look at the systems, we have a 98.2 uptime on the systems, which is in excess of what we had targeted and expected of that. And then around creating a sustainable and capable institution, which is our strategic objective six, there's an we've automated several of the HR systems in the course of the year. And then we filled those posts that are critical and are in new areas of work. So that was a target we hit. And I'm going to come back to this. Part of the HR framework has been looked at and will continue to be looked at in the future, including career pathing and the remuneration, because we have had serious problems about being able to find the skills and so on that we need to be able to do the work that we do, which is highly specialized. Introduced an onboarding program, which is working. And then we've created the communication awareness platform, which will then enable us to do a lot of the enhanced compliance work as we roll out our strategy over the next period. So these are our strategic objectives. And at a high level, this is what we have achieved in the course of the year. Chair, we're already sweating and there haven't been any questions yet. FIC is a it is a small organization. It has a staff complement of 143, and that slide gives you a division, percentage division of the equity component of that. And then similarly with the staff complement, breaking it into further equity splits, Chair, around management level, as well as then non-management, the staff as a whole. On the financial side, revenue of 182 was allocated to the FIC, expenditure of 137. So there was an underspend and a surplus of 45 million last year, and we will discuss that as well. Of that, 74.5 went on personnel, 53 on administration, and then depreciation cost of 9.2. I'll come to that and discuss that a little bit later on. And then on the financial position, on the assets, the 67 allocated there, non-current assets sitting at 42, net asset value of 94.8, Chair. If we look at the budget allocation for the year under review, that was the split. 47% of it goes in the support services, including the IT, no, sorry, it doesn't include the IT support, it's facilities and other support services, 8 on the legal, 15 on the intelligence and monitoring side, and then the compliance side as well. So those are splits in relation to the allocations. Chair, in terms of the path going forward, we've spent quite a bit of time looking at a new operating model for the development of financial intelligence in this country. And that process has also been benchmarked against 5 or 6 other countries who are involved in the same process. The recession has meant that the financial intelligence units around the world can no longer simply receive SDRs and other bits of data, but it's to make sense of that and to provide real hard financial intelligence over and above what we already do, including the development of policy instruments for the various ministers of finance in particular. So it's hard to develop that, well, developing that particular model, and when we come back to you later in the year with our strat plan for next year, we have the details of that set out. We're also going to be spending a lot of time looking at compliance and how to create a culture of compliance across all of those affected business areas and work with the supervisory bodies to be able to give effect to that. So there's a lot of focus on the compliance side. And linked to both of those, it's the effectiveness of the organization as a system and the ease with which people can comply and do the best. And we've built up experience in the last 5 years. We've understood a lot that was not apparent when the legislation went through Parliament some years ago. But practice has shown us where there are challenges, where there are shortfalls, where there are obstacles that we have to deal with. And we're putting process and plans in effect to do that. So flowing from that, we see more effective anti-money laundering supervision taking place. We see more visible enforcement or compliance enforcement actions taking place. We have set up an inspectorate to monitor this and to sanction non-compliance, and we're working with other supervisory bodies to put the same into effect. We're working on the provision of financial intelligence and understanding, and I always say it in the economy, the illicit economies, the different parts of our national economy function differently in different areas, and to understand that and how do proceeds get generated in the process and how do those proceeds then get hidden or laundered in the system or moved outside of the country. And so instead of just one part of it, it's seeing it as a total system. And that's work that we're going to be doing and working with several other institutions, departments internally, domestically, as well as internationally. There's a huge expectation, as we discussed with you when you visited us, around our ability to work with law enforcement bodies, particularly the Hawks as presently constituted, SARS, intelligence agencies. And we have to expand and create a national footprint. So there's a direct engagement and interaction where investigations are taking place. Then moving into the region, there's ongoing pressure to assist countries, particularly our neighbors, but also other countries in the region, to put in place similar systems. There's been a lot of progress in the last, particularly the last 3 years, but not nearly enough to make it a foolproof system. There's constant reviewing of the legal framework, as I said, and changing the Act, constant developing of the ICT infrastructure, and then, of course, also enhancing the profile of the FIC and the Centre. And just on that point, we've tended to try to stay below the radar in the past period, past year, and the last few years, as we've developed and consolidated our relationship with the law enforcement and intelligence agencies. With the new thrust, we have to focus on compliance, and that's going to require that a significant portion or substantial portion of the FIC work will be engaging with business companies and supervisory bodies, and that has to take place in the public domain very visibly and forthrightly. So that's going to change the nature of our work. Pierre, just a final word here, that we are attempting to be somewhat green in our work, and the production of the annual report is sitting at 61.55 rand per copy. Chair, in the annual report there are a number of issues that I've alluded to, and you'll no doubt want to ask questions of. The first one of those is an underspend of 45 million rand, and that's an underspend that has been creeping up on us over 3 years or so. You'll recall that we, at the behest of the minister 2 years ago, made savings in our IT system. We were able to identify parts of the system at a ridiculously cheap, and that then made huge savings, but at the same time it had a knock-on effect in terms of the rollout. So that was some of the money sent back to Treasury. The other area that we are having problems, and we've made no secrets of it, is the area of specialized skills. While we don't have a large staff, and it's never intended that the FIC should have a large staff, the staff that is there need to be very smart and very specialized. And we are struggling to find those people. Now, partly we've been hamstrung by the HR framework and the REM framework that we've been operating under. The minister has signed off on creating more flexibility in our remuneration framework, and that's going to enable us to now be able to hopefully both identify but bring on board those people that we need to do that. This is not necessarily, I'm not talking about vacancies here, I'm talking about growing the organization and filling those posts we need to fill as we move forward. But that's a huge challenge. And I think another issue that arises out of that is that we're all fishing in a very, very small pond. Other supervisory bodies and the financial institutions themselves, banks and so on, are competing for the same scarce skills. We need a growing number of compliance officers and people who can operate within the inspections domain as well as give legal guidance to entities. Those are the very same people that we are being that are being fought over by banks and others. So that puts significant pressure on us. We are trying to find innovative ways to meet that skills deficit, but it's not necessarily that easy. Chair, you'll recall that in terms of financial statements, you'll notice that there's been a restatement of those of the financials. That was necessary because our assets hadn't taken into account a number of factors, so we needed to recount all of those assets at the beginning of the audit. So that explains that there. And that then also feeds into the situations we had with our previous CFO, who's no longer with us. The question was raised in the last interaction with you around that. We've had to deal with that matter, but that has also created something of a stumble as we move forward. The AG picked up that a number of controls had not been put in place. We accepted that. We've worked hard on that, and I can report that now, a few months after the audit, those controls are all in place and effective. So these are some of the things that have been raised and are noted in the annual report, but I thought it would be important that we put them right up front, Chair. So that's the story. Hopefully we can go through both the high-level introduction as well as then look at the documentation itself and be able to answer and engage with whatever questions any of the members have. Chair, it's all yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Honorable members, Dr. George, Honorable Dumazana, Honorable Adams, and Honorable Van Rooyen, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for your presentation. You mentioned the CFO, and I do recall that we had a discussion on that in the past. There's also an item about conduct of an employee, fraudulent misconduct of an employee. I'm assuming it's not the CFO, somebody else. So my question is, what level of the organization is this employee or was this employee? You mentioned the steps were taken to prevent recurrence or control measures. I just want to know that that is actually the case. And then also, how much did they steal? And then finally, on the last slide you mentioned, and thank you very much, that's very useful, the cost per copy of this document. But I would also like to know how many of them were produced so I can calculate the cost. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the FIC, the acting, I don't know if the acting is here or whatever, okay. But thank you very much. I think I do appreciate that you do have the strategic objectives. That I do appreciate. Much as your strategic objectives, I don't know how much are they going to assist the committee as far as our oversight is concerned, because we always would love to measure. I've seen one of your outcomes, I think it's strategic 1 and 2, where you can be able, when you come back next time, to say, but you did not reach this because you set the targets. But with the rest of the strategic objectives, then they become a bit of like, As a result, as I was going through your report, you look at the strategic objectives. Because the strategic objectives, the majority of them, they are missing the program. I am then failing to align it with your budget. I'm failing to align it with your financial statements or with your financial reports. The only thing that I'm seeing on your financial reports, it's just the property, the plants, the equipment, the administration, and the salaries. That's basically it. There isn't an alignment of that to the strategic objectives. Now, I've got a question here, Honorable Chair. I would like to take you to the page, the presenter. It's page 67. Of your report. You know, I'm asking myself, as far as the lease are concerned, there is so much money that you are spending on renting. There is so much money that you are spending. And above that, you are spending so much money on those lease, and you also pay for the parking expense, which goes to 1.2. Which is quite a lot, and that is for the staff. And I don't understand. And you have indicated to us that you are having such a problem as far as the recruitment and the placement of the people. But you, having said that, you have also spent 2.5. So which means there were adverts that they were done, and maybe the group of people that they were selected were not selected correctly, or the group of people that I don't know what happened. So if I can just get a clarity on that one, you know, and people, when they move around within the country, where they sleep in the hotels. And use some subsistences for them, fee. Really, does it have to go to 1.something? Can we account for that? So I've gone through your financial statements, like I have said. I don't get a feeling that we will be able, as the committee, to go back and say, you know, strategic number 2, program so-and-so of strategic number 2 has been achieved, and it was achieved within what was budgeted for. That is what is missing in the report. Thank you.
Ch- Chair, I'm partially covered by the questions of Dr. George, but I'd like to know on the Auditor General's report on page, I think it's 48, the misconduct of the employee, the report says it's ongoing. I'd like to know how far it is now and when FIC intends to appoint the new CFO. And then on page 14, the strategic achievements, improved consumption of FIC products and services, 1.2. Your objective is to provide timely responses to requests, but your actual performance, there you say you responded only to 59 requests timely. To what do you attribute that? Thank you.
I'm going to split up some of the responses so you don't have to listen to my boring voice all the time, Chair. If I could just start off on Honourable George's question. The fraud happened at a low level, but it was somebody who had access to the system and was able to manipulate the system, and that person is on trial, and the trial is ongoing. So that partly answers your question as well, Honourable Member. The amount, and I need to stand corrected, and maybe we can get the amount here, but I don't have it at my fingertips. 437,000. But it's an order of that, and I don't have the specific amount, and I can come back to you with that. That's not a problem at all. And then just a small question. These were unit costs. The 61.55 is a unit cost. And again, we can talk, if you want, the numbers that were produced, but we're trying to produce the annual report in as much an electronic form as possible on disks, et cetera, rather than printing all of these copies. So that's the approach we're taking, but I'm going to ask my colleague to come in on that. I want to deal with the question, Honourable Member de Bazana, on the strat and the link to the finance and the actual targets met or not met, because I entirely agree with you, and I think that's precisely what we're trying to work through at the moment. When we developed this three-year process, it was really a continuation of the previous period as well. So it's a five-year process of putting in place the FIC. And we've learned a huge amount in that process. And we're looking to consolidate and correct and clean up, it's partly a cleanup, but also be more precise and more accurate in the way that we measure and deal with our work and so on. So when we underspent and sent back to Treasury the 45 million. It's not a bad thing, it's a good thing as far as I'm concerned. Because what it does, it also helps take us to a zero-based budgeting process. And it means we can begin to be far more specific about what we're trying to achieve, how we're going to do it, how much we're going to spend in doing that. That is the objective in this process. So as we clean up and we come back to you, Chair, with our future strat plan, it's going to include the targets, it's going to include the measures, and the ability to monitor the stuff more precisely. So, yes, you're absolutely right. On the issue of lease, we were involved in discussion with National Treasury some 2.5 years ago to acquire our own, not our, but the state, to acquire a building which is customized to our work. We had engaged and negotiated with the PIC to build us such premises, and then the deal fell flat, not from our side, but through the then Minister of Finance and others. So we've had to go back to the drawing board. We're involved in the same discussions again. It would make a lot of sense if instead of leasing premises, the state owned the premises, it built it specifically for this kind of work, it built in the kind of security requirements, and then all the other, for example, public interface, the conference, meeting rooms, et cetera, all of that sort of stuff. So it makes total sense. We'll also then be able to get around paying for the parking. At the moment, it's built into the, not built into, but the building that we hire, we have to afford staff the security and the safety. So we need to be able to put them into various parking facilities and make sure that security is there to protect them. And if truth be told, one of my major concerns as the head of the FIC, one of the things that keeps me awake at night is the security of the personnel. The environment is simply getting rougher as we move forward, as we get exposed to more and more data, as we understand how the modus operandi and the way in which criminals operate and organized crime operates, it raises serious concerns around the safety of personnel. So we are putting effort into trying to manage that and reduce the risks. And certainly part of that would be to make sure that we have our own premises. But in the current economic situation and the collection, that's something that we have to negotiate and discuss with the Minister and yourselves as a committee. If I could ask,
thank you very much. I think Mario has captured all the things. There was a question on the new CFO when they're starting. The CFO has been appointed and is going to start in the middle of November, who's a permanent employee. But regarding the recruitment costs, if I take that, I think Grace, can you come up on that, please? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And, yes, we've spent a lot of money in terms of recruitment and placement costs because last year our focus was on IT, building the IT, and also filling the position at executive level. The experience was that it was very difficult for us to find suitable candidates via the advertising, so we had to go and headhunt for those positions. So a lot of cost here is around the placement cost and the advert because we're recruiting at the executive level in IT skills.
What you haven't said is that even though we're recruiting at that level and we have a combination of advertising but also headhunting, and we go through the interview process, and we're not able to appoint. It's once we get into the psychometric testing and the verifying, we cannot appoint. So at the face level, it looks like it's an appointment that's going to work, there's going to be a proper fit, and then when we go through the process, we're finding it's not happening. Now, certainly Christopher on the compliance side, and Michelle on the analysis intelligence side, they've had that process on an ongoing way. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Director. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll touch quickly on a few of the items raised. Apart from these issues that the Director has raised, another problem we experience is to, even after you pass the psychometric evaluation, the security clearances equally become a challenge. We have to apply the MIS principle, and we, at certain levels, have to ensure that the individual gets a top secret clearance or a secret clearance. The big issue or the big challenge here is that very often individuals' areas are arisen around people's solvency, their own personal financial position. It becomes a risk to recruit individuals who have access to strategic information when they themselves are in a position that is compromised financially, because they become attractive targets to criminals that jeopardize the initiatives of the state, so that becomes a problem. I wanted to quickly answer the question on why we were only able to respond within the time frame of 59 requests. Sorry, 59% of the requests. The two primary issues here. Firstly, it has been a loss of skill. We spend a lot of time bringing individuals in, firstly attracting them, recruiting them, training them, often getting them trained in foreign countries, bringing them back, training them in domestic institutions, then using them in the system, and then we lose them, particularly in my area, to other government agencies, specifically the security apparatus or private sector institutions who are trying to build their capacity. We've also noticed that once people learn the tradecraft, they leave to open their own businesses, because once you learn the tricks of the trade, you actually become a good businessman. So, we tend to be losing either to entrepreneurs or individuals who are moving within the government framework. But if we lose to government, it's okay. We still build relations with them, in short. On the issue of traveling, it's a good point. I think that a big contributing factor to this is that we need to put people on the ground where the investigations are. Because we don't have offices across the country, it forces operationally individuals to travel. The travel and subsistence amounts we pay are straightforward government rates. We take the rates straight out of public service circulars. So we don't have our own rate. In fact, I always argue with the director that we, in some instances, pay less than what the state is supposed to be paying. But in any event, we pay straight government rates. So this is the reason why subsistence is a bit. Also, there is a large component of foreign activity that happens here, because we have a foreign mandate as well. So there is a degree of subsistence associated to that. But that is, again, paid against government rates. So as I said, why we were only able to produce 59% is simply because we lost a large number of staff. And number two, the other thing that we have noticed is that our agencies we correspond with, as an example, the police, the security apparatus, the receiver, they too are adapting their techniques of investigating individuals. And it is more becoming financially driven. So the scope of the investigations they conduct are far more complex and huge, which results in our role becoming more complex. So whereas 3 years ago, when you would get a request saying, does Mr. X have a bank account, you got a request nowadays coming in saying, track all the finances across the globe and give us an analytical view of it. So the nature of the job becomes far bigger, and so the time allocated to the job is far more resource intensive. That's primarily it.
Yes. Very high turnaround time, 24 hours to respond.
Yes.
Taking longer, not that it's not happening.
Just as an example, we set a benchmark. A foreign request should be processed in 5 days. So in other words, a request from a foreign country to investigate or probe a South African citizen must be conducted within 5 days. It's a very short time frame. This is an international standard. Then there are 10 days, 20 days, 30 days. So each one of these things have a time frame, and sometimes you can't really process something in 10 days. It's very difficult.
I would like to just deal with two issues. One is the travel, firstly, and then the staff. The nature of the compliance work as currently set out is that we are required to cover the length and breadth of South Africa, and we send people where there are interventions all over the country. And because we don't have regional offices, we have to fit the bill of housing them in facilities that I can work out as well, and also attending workshops or seminars or lakotlas, wherever there is an initiative on the ground where there's a compliance request that we bring information to a business sector, we have to service that. That in itself raises the cost of air travel, car hire, and accommodation. I think the more serious challenge for us is the staff. As a compliance side of the FIC, we are in direct competition with the people that we oversee and supervise through the supervisory bodies. And here it's essentially the big financial sector institutions like banks and insurance companies and the like. And what we have found in the past is that we have become in many sense a training facility. Because the FIC Act is a new skill set, we find that the market is very hungry for our people, and we bring them in, we pay a comparable salary, we train them for 18 months, and then they get poached by the very same people that they are out there, you know, advising and giving guidance to. So it's a very difficult area to work in. But we are pleased to say we've had some returns in the sense where we have lost one or two people and they've come back to us to work with us. But the big issue for us is really how do we start a process where we can organically grow the skill set. And we've had initiatives in the past where we've attempted an academy type situation where we took young and bright people straight out of university, and we've been, Grace and I, to various universities where we've spoken to seek recent graduates to come and join the FIC. We need to relook at that model and to make it more institutionalized. But for us, that is the best way of organically growing our own people. That does not mean we will lose the people, because we will lose them. I think the market demand is such that we will lose them to the banks that want people that are specialists, and particularly trained by us, because we are going to question them and they know exactly how we think. So it's a continuous challenge. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Yeah, end of it. I wanted to indicate that the amount involved in the individual who had stole money from the center, the amount involved was around 400,000 South African rands, and 144,000 of that has been recovered. So we were able to identify and pull back 144. But he's on trial at this stage, so it's in the judicial system and it's sub judice.
It was just a small request on the number of annual reports that were printed, just 500, even though the members left.
For the record.
Yeah, for the record.
Okay, thank you. Van Rooyen.
Well, thank you very much. Let me start by welcoming the presentation, but also maybe commending the director together with his team for the good work that they are doing for the country so far. Chair, I think generally one must, I'm tempted to comment that looking at the amount of money that has been maybe lost as a result of financial deficiency, I'm a bit worried, because at the center of our oversight role is to ensure that money meant for services are appropriately utilized for such. Because as you are all aware, I mean, the biggest challenge that we are facing as a country is that we don't have resources in abundance. And the needs of our people are just overwhelming. So as a result, it's important for us to always in our little corner, because everyone has a role to play in ensuring that resources allocated are appropriately utilized. So at the end of the day, we realize the bigger picture, which is improvement of the lives of our people. So I think it's very key that as we move forward, more especially as a compliance enforcement agent, I mean, we remember that. I know it's always in your mind, but I thought it's important. Looking at the amount of money that we are losing as a result of financial deficiencies, I thought it's important for me to come back and reemphasize on this point. My specific questions, Chair, are on the I will start with the AG's report. I know the director did entertain some of the issues raised, but I will obviously pose questions that will seek to get some details on some of the issues. The first issue is on the irregular expenditure of 4.8 million. It's quite a substantial amount. And so far, I've only heard of two cases, a junior employee and a CFO. What goes into this irregular expenditure and what actions have been taken? Can we get the details of this? I think it's very important. And secondly, Chair, it's the AG is citing that the entity incurred a fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 47,000. Due to interest and penalties arising from late payment of supplier invoices. Why should it happen? Could we get answers and get to know what is it being done to ensure that this is not going to recur? And also on the same paragraph, fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 281,000 due to poor performing contract appointed and the work later crept and started over. Is this a procurement gap? If it's a procurement gap, how are we dealing with this so as we are able to save this amount of money? And also, Chair, the director said the underspending of 445 million in the main is as a result of IT savings. I'm not sure as of when savings are regarded as under expenditure, but that's what the director said. IT savings as well as obviously the cited reason here, which is shortage of specialized skills. So are there other things that have to do with that underspending besides the two, or these are the only two reasons why you incurred an underspending? And going forward, Chair, on the financial statement that's on the page 67 of your report, I wanted to just to confirm the trend in terms of professional fees. Because you are paying, I mean, or you have paid 6.7 million on this aspect. Is it as a result of your failure to hire specialized skills, or is there any other reason why we are spending so exorbitantly on professional fees? Yeah. My last question is on page 73 of the financial statement of the report. You see, we have heard that the CFO contract has been terminated after he was suspended. But also we have heard from the presentation that there were a lot of financial gaps. But what now puzzled me is the fact that the same CFO. In fact, I was going to ask the same thing to you, Director, but fortunately you didn't get a bonus in as far as this report is concerned. What justified this bonus? Of the CFO who was suspended, the CFO was ultimately terminated from the employer of the company. What justified this? But also the CFO who failed, to potentially, oversee the expenses and the financial transactions of the entity. What justifies this bonus? I know there might be other reasons why people are paid bonuses, but it puzzles me why this CFO had to be paid bonus after all the highlighted weaknesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions, honorable members, follow up? Okay. Mr. Michel, good. Not before, I have one or two questions. Van Rooyen has covered my questions on the concerns by the AG's office.
But I also have a question on the surplus that has been recorded here. It's more than 100% as compared to the previous year. I just want to check if that surplus, when it was calculated, also included the unspent funds, or is the surplus on its own without that. You also mentioned the fact that you have made savings on the IT section, but it's not clear as to how much was saved under that program. On strategic objective number 3, dealing with the ESAAMLG. It was reported here in this committee that you will do an analysis or a research of some sort to identify priorities and needs for the technical assistance within the region. And that was supposed to be approved by the second quarter. And if I look at the report, it's not clear whether that has happened or not. If not, what are the plans to correct that? Also, on objective number 1, strategic objective number 1, I remember this because I asked this question when you presented the strategic plan in the committee before. There was a promise again that FIC will respond to cases that are brought forward by the stakeholders to them on an agreed period of time, and the target was 90%. And according to the report, you have not met that 90%. We'll appreciate if we can get reasons for that and what are the remedial programs that you have put in place to address that. Thank you.
Start answering and then hand over as well to my colleague here. Firstly, thank you very much for the commendation of the work done. And I think, Chair, we don't have to wait for the end of the session, but it's certainly something that the FIC government can be very proud of. There's a group of people here who have been working in the FIC, who put the FIC up in a short space of time, have actually achieved major results, and that now is feeding directly into the work of investigative agencies and security agencies for the protection of our citizens, our economy, and our environment. And I have to thank them particularly as well, because they do make my life easy. They take on huge amounts of stress. They're all shouldering more than they need to in terms of their JDs and performance reviews. And they're not necessarily rewarded for it, but none out of sincere commitment to ensuring our country's future. And they do it professionally. But Chair, we take on board the need to keep at the forefront of our mind all the time what is in the country. And so the deficits, in our view, are not deficits. They are money's return to the budget for use in the great sea market. And that was a fee that the Minister of Finance had made last financial year. What savings could be effective? Where could you trim? Where could you cut in order to make those funds available elsewhere across government? So that was very much the ethos thinking behind how we were trying to do that. And that was certainly a direct reason for the adoption of the IT system that we bought and installed, as opposed to creating and building our own IT system at that point in time. We will still have to come back and still create the second generation IT system. Our data set and the analysis needs are such that we will not be able to cope with what we've got for more than a few few years, so there's going to have to be a space. But it helps get us through the immediate picture of those days. On the irregular expenditure, that particular issue relates to our pension, by pension amount. And it was our pension provider was brought on board some 5 or 6 years ago when the FIC was still in the embrace of national treasury. In other words, we were still when FIC started, we were operating within treasury. And that was the framework. And what the general found was that we do have the documentation going back 5 or 6 years to three quotes. And so that then led to the particular annotation on the fruitless side, 47,000 was for the development of certain communication materials and resources and so on. I'm certainly responsible for the lesser organization, and this is the amount that was then not for the contractor was not followed up, and those amounts were not delivered. So we're sitting with that gap and that problem. On the other understanding, I think that we found out that the bulk of that relates to the skills and skills deficit that we have. There was certainly the knock-on effect of not having to implement the IT system in its totality when we thought we would do it, when we said we would do it. That then had an impact all the way through to the last year. But I want to bring members of the committee back to the situation when the FIC was formed. Because that also speaks to the question, honourable member, that the FIC started functioning 3 years after it was promulgated. The first 3 years, the individuals who were operating within the organization and the systems that we were using, etc. Individuals were seconded by National Treasury, SARS, law enforcement, and so on, who carried the cost of those individuals. And the original systems that we were using, the platform, was provided by the National Treasury. The Parliament had already allocated 134 million. For that building trade. So we didn't need to use any of that money. And what happened effectively was those monies were then rolled over year by year and started accumulating and started causing the problem. So what we're doing through this process is rebasing, trying to go back to the zero-based approach, rebasing, working out precisely for what we actually will need, both in the next financial year as well as over the MCAS period. And then to identify those issues of major expenditure, major capital expenditure, like the new IT system that we will have to develop, we will work out what we need to do, when we need to do it, and the amount required, and make a separate request to National Treasury and to the Revenue Committee to be able to deal with it. Exactly the same then what we need to create, customize the premises from which to work, as well as the national system. So we're taking the same approach to that. So that's the way of then being able to clear up those accumulated rollover amounts that have been sitting on the shelf. In terms of professional fees, that feeds into the same thing. We've agreed in the FIC with the ministers that we do not want to hire people for the long-term future if their responsibility only is to conduct the development process for a short period of time, rather bringing them in, getting to finish the job, and then they leave it. Okay, so there's an amount of professional, that professional fees amount is significantly lower than had been in previous years, even though there's a slight uptick in that amount. With all of these issues here. Okay. Do you want to pick up on some of the other things?
Thank you very much. I think I'll talk generally about issues that pertain to supply chain without necessarily sticking them one by one, because quite a few of them are related to the supply chain aspect of it. We admit and acknowledge the fact that, like the director said, that some of the controls from our previous CEOs haven't been very good and have led to some of these issues here. And the Auditor General has picked that up as well in the report. We're currently busy with addressing all those issues. I've got a list of these issues that are there in the Auditor General to close those gaps. And those gaps range from ensuring that policies are really up to date, but they are also implemented in terms of having processes and control measures in place and continuous review. So of all those issues that have been raised there that are supply chain related, we're confident to say currently we've probably addressed 80% of them, and the next time we sit here, we should have addressed all of them. I would also like to follow up on the professional fees, like the director has said. Since our business is to do with a lot of IT work, specialized analysis, analytical tools that have to be put in place, big platforms to be able to support that business, it will sit with us for some foreseeable future. In fact, going forward, to be calling in specialized skills. Some of them come with specialized systems and applications that we have to adopt and make it part of our tools that we use. So they come at a once-off cost that is a professional fee. So rather than having them on a permanent basis, it's a once-off specialized system development for our purposes. So that's how it's seen in the financials. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any follow-up questions? Honorable Van Rooyen and Honorable Dubazan.
Thank you, Chair. Now, in fact, what I just wanted to confirm on this aspect of professional fees is the relationship with this particular expenditure pattern with the current problem that is faced by the institution of recruiting or maybe hiring people with the necessary skills, because you cited that as a problem in this part. So I just wanted to check is there any relation. So if we can expect, obviously, some decline if this particular problem is addressed, but the way you are saying, those reasons that you have provided are very familiar to say why we need professionalism. But I just wanted to get the link between that and the problem cited, you know. So, Chair, maybe just as a request, maybe we need to get the details of this response plan to OEG's concerns. Mm-hmm. I think it's very key, just to ensure that we are able to execute our oversight duty accordingly. You know, so next time, we don't speculate. We know exactly what is it that we are trying to address. You know? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is also a request, because we are quite concerned about the lack of. Can you switch off yourself? Sorry, because it's irritating my thing. So mine is also a request regarding the program that you spoke about, that you are now trying to recruit from the tertiary institutions, so as to build up these scarce skills which we need at the FIC. But I don't know where you're going to get the money, because it doesn't show in your financial statements. What is showing in your financial statement is that 596 for just to train the staff. So maybe my request will be, when we look at the 2011-2012, let us get the feeling as to really indeed you are seeing it as a problem, and you have budgeted for this, you have requested the money from the National Treasury, so as to achieve that objective. Thank you, Chair.
Because we're engaged at the moment around the identifying particular funds which you can use for these sorts of activities. Building, recruitment, retention, and so on. And I'm sure that matter is going to come up when the presentations are made around the NTDPS and so on. So that's going to be a future area of struggle for us all, if we're going to achieve that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mitchell and your team. Firstly, for Avele, can't you write it down and send it to honorable member? It's urgent. Okay. It's fine. Okay. Mr. Mitchell, do you have a response on that?
It's my understanding that that bonus was related to the previous year. So we pay the bonus from the previous period that she was involved in the organization, previous year functioning, not the current year. That's where that number arrived.
Okay, although the wrongdoings were done in that previous year, but she or he had to still get the bonuses for doing wrong. Okay, honorable member, we will deal with those issues as we continue engaging with the FIC. Thank you, FIC family, for availing yourself, in particular for this session, but also to thank you for the good work that you are doing for this country. I think the concerns that we had regarding the report before us have been partly addressed. The only issue that we still need more engagements with you is on your response on the AG's concerns. There are serious concerns that are raised by the Auditor General's office. I think as we move on, we'll find time to further engage you on this matter. Regarding our report in terms of what has been presented here today, we will forward our response to the Minister and your office before the end of November. Thank you very much and travel safe back to Pretoria. Thank you. Honorable members, we will break for 9 minutes and when we come back, we will get a briefing from the Reserve Bank.
It's been an opportunity.